Christmas, and ghost stories? This is the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore. We welcome Chris Filippo. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thank you. Glad to talk to you.
Chris Filippo is a historian who lives in Bethlehem, New York, an appropriate residence for the editor of a book on Christmas stories, really. Chris Filippo is editor of the Valancourt Book of Victorian Christmas Ghost Stories, Volume 4. Can you tell us about this series, I gather, of ghost story books and how you got involved with them?
They had published three volumes 3 years in a row, and each volume had a different editor. The majority of the stories in those volumes were British. The tradition of Christmas ghost stories is largely associated with England, in large part because of Charles Dickens and A Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. And the other ghost stories that he wrote. But they were a popular thing to have in the either annual books or magazines that were published around Christmas, special Christmas issues that would be published, Christmas gift books. Ghost stories were especially popular in those. Some of them would be stories that were actually set during the Christmas season, although mm-hmm. quite a lot of them are ones that were just ghost stories that happened to be published at Christmas time, but which had no actual Christmas content in them. So both types of stories get referred to as Christmas ghost stories. Mm-hmm. So given that the publishers had not published a volume last year after having done 3 years in a row, and they had a different editor for each of the three volumes that they had published, I'd written them and asked if they were interested in continuing the series or not, because I thought that I could probably find more material for them for a fourth volume. And they indicated that they hadn't done one last year because they thought possibly the well had run dry. Maybe a lot of the best stories had been published already by them or by other publishers. There's Christmas ghost story anthologies that have been published since, I think the 1980s. Once in a while, a different editor puts one out there. And I still thought that there would probably be a lot of material. I was interested initially in expanding beyond just the British tradition, but looking at stories that had been published by people from all around the world, and maybe even bringing in some of the other similar traditions like Krampus, sort of the Christmas type monster from kind of Austria, and some of the other characters like that, the more sinister companions to Santa Claus who punish the naughty children by, bringing a switch to spank them with or carrying them away in a satchel.
Right. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So,
I just find this whole thing fascinating because I guess it never, you can knock me over with a feather. I mean, I never considered this. Yes, I guess, Charles Dickens and Christmas Carol. Yeah, that's the ghosts and so on. But what is the connection between Christmas and ghosts?
I guess there's a number. I mean, partly one of the big influences, I think, was just that they were commercial. Ghost stories were commercial. Publishers saw that they sold well. Buying books as gifts were popular at Christmas time, so it was sort of a mm-hmm. natural fit on that level. But that's not all that there was to it. I mean, there's an older tradition of winter stories that you would tell around a fireplace or a fire when it's cold out, and kind of ghost stories being popular just generally at that time. Something that gets referenced in some of Shakespeare's plays, these sort of winter tales. So during the season, people were doing that long before Christmas was around, So it's one of the Christmas celebrations, I guess, that has deeper roots than are found in Christianity alone. One does find, though, in a number of Christmas carols that the older ones, ones that aren't particularly sung very often today, that they did have pretty dark themes in them, kind of celebrating the nativity, but noting how that foreshadowed Christ's death and resurrection, and so they would get into, you know, the temptations of the devil and things like that. So you already have some pretty dark imagery coming in there, and the biblical story of the slaughter of the innocents, you know, all the infants that were killed by Herod trying to kill Jesus, which is quite dark and morbid as well. So there are ways in which they mesh that way, that it may have seemed a more natural fit.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Chris Filippo. He's editor of the Valancourt Book of Victorian Christmas Ghost Stories, Volume 4. Just a word or two, if you could, on what is Valancourt? That's the name of the publisher, right?
That's the name of the publisher, and they've published quite a lot of books. I mean, a lot of Gothic books and horror books in particular, but not exclusively. I'm thinking it was the name of one of their cats.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure about that.
Well, I think that'll suffice. What you have about 30 stories in the book that you've edited. And when you put it together, did you, in fact, focus on stories from America?
Yeah, I mean, from my original proposal to have stories from all around the world, they asked that I focus specifically on America. So the stories, the majority of them are written by American authors. There's a few that are written by Canadian authors, generally ones that the authors have some kind of tie to the U.S., though. And there's a couple by French authors that were either translated by Americans or that were at least published by American publishers.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your introduction, you mention an early American author, if you will, Washington Irving, who died before the Civil War started. And he has a story called The Christmas Dinner, but you don't have his story in there. But tell us about Washington Irving.
Right. Well, I mean, both Washington Irving and Charles Dickens kind of get referred to as the fathers of Christmas. And Irving had sort of detailed a British kind of Christmas celebration in that story, part of a longer work, and the connection with the ghost stories in that. He didn't have a Christmas ghost story in it per se, but he does reference the tradition in that, and Washington Irving is credited with kind of helping to popularize Christmas in America and in England as well to some extent, because for a long time it was a date on the calendar. You know, people would say Christmas December 25th. But they didn't necessarily celebrate it to the extent that they do today. I had found part of that is, you know, in the Northeast, the Puritan heritage, where for a number of decades they had actually banned the celebration of the holiday, in part because it could get pretty raucous. But I had found an article from the Boston Statesman in December of 1849, where they noted that the observance of the Christmas festival is growing more and more general in our country. So, I mean, pretty late in American history is where Christmas started getting celebrated more conspicuously. And it was that same year, 1849, when Christmas was designated a holiday in New York State. And it wasn't so much as, you know, designating the day as a holiday to celebrate. It was called an act to designate the holidays to be observed in the acceptance and payment of bills of exchange and promissory notes. Not the most Christmassy title for a till, you know. It had more to do with, I think, trying not to foreclose on people on the holidays. And then the United States official recognition at the federal level was 1870, you know, relatively late. But I had gotten into, I guess I had gotten curious about the Christmas ghost story tradition just from the lyrics, and it's the most wonderful time of the year. You know, there'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what? Okay, scary ghost stories. What are the scary ghost stories?
What's that got to do with it? You know, well, let me ask you about some of the stories in the book. I mean, sure. You've edited. One is called The Green Huntsman or The Haunted Villa, A Christmas Legend of Louisiana. What is that about?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Published in 1841, so it actually predates Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which was done a few years later. And The Green Huntsman was published in The Lady's Companion, which was a periodical from New York State. So here we have a relatively early American Christmas ghost story coming out of New York, as so many Christmas traditions did in general. And it's an interesting one. It doesn't have a ghost per se. It has sort of this unusual demonic creature that can kind of appear to be somewhat human, who there's sort of a deal with the devil, so to speak, where a man who wants to marry a woman despite his being very ugly kind of gets this demonic creature to help him, and the consequences of that are pretty bad. So, yeah, it's a good one to start the volume with, not just, you know, chronologically, but because it is such a dark story. And the tradition, I should note, it wasn't specific to ghosts exactly. I mean, ghost story can be somewhat of a broad term, just like fairy tale. You know, a fairy tale, mm-hmm. You don't always have a fairy in a fairy tale. It just means a certain type of story. And similarly, a ghost story can be sort of a supernatural horror story of sorts. Even back in 1730, there was a book about Christmas generally, and in the title of it, it referred to not just ghosts, but, let me see, fairies, ghosts, hobgoblins, witches, bull beggars, raw heads, and bloody bones. As all the sort of creatures that you might tell stories about at Christmas time.
Sure. And one of the titles that you've anthologized is Worse Than a Ghost Story. What is that?
That was an interesting one. That was not the original title to the story. I wasn't able to find the original appearance of the story. COVID-19 is kind of making research in general a little more challenging. You have to rely on online databases or librarians that are still able to access materials, even if the library is closed. That story is one that seems to have a strong influence from Edgar Allan Poe. It's quite dark, and it goes to a further extent to try to seem like actual news. Like, it kind of prefaces it with, you know, we have this from this letter that we've received, and it has like a notarized statement that appears at the end. And kind of that is, you know, a typical sort of part of a ghost story, like an effort by the narrator within the story to say, you know, you might not believe this is true, but I can tell you, you know, this is what happened to me personally. That story goes way further than a lot of the other ones do in trying to convince you that it's for real. But the events of it are so gruesome in their detail that you know, okay, this is just a story.
Right. And that it is. We're talking with Chris Philippeau, who's editor of the Valancourt Book of Victorian Christmas Ghost Stories, Volume 4, back in a moment. The Historians Podcast depends on your contributions. You can link to our GoFundMe page on our website, bobcudmore.com. Find a link there. Or send a check made out to Bob Cudmore to 125 Horseman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. And thank you for listening to the Historians Podcast. Chris Philippeau joins us. He's editor of the Valancourt Book of Victorian Christmas Ghost Stories, Volume 4. African American stories posed problems for you in editing this book. I believe that you wrote about that in the introduction. Why?
Yeah, I mean, the publishers and I were both interested in having some diversity in the authorship. Women are known to have written a lot of ghost stories generally, and I did find a number of ghost stories by women authors. Possibly women wrote stories, Christmas ghost stories, that specifically were set at Christmas somewhat less often. But there still were a lot of stories by them. The African Americans, that was pretty challenging. Part of the problem, of course, is that a lot of these stories and poems are anonymous, or when they're published, they don't give any biographical information about the authors. But, you know, generally you can kind of track that information down in a lot of cases. But it proved to be quite difficult to find stories by African American authors, even when searching within databases of like African American newspapers specifically. And I was kind of wondering, you know, what's going on here? Why aren't there at least some? Because the closest examples, there were a couple that I didn't include. One was a poem where a child hears a noise at night, Christmas Eve, and he thinks maybe it's Santa Claus, but then he's worried about getting in trouble with Santa because he's awake rather than being a good boy and being asleep. And he ends up deciding, well, I still got my presents, so it must have been a Christmas ghost rather than Santa Claus. And I do provide information about where people can find that one. But some of the two examples that I was able to include, one was from an African-American newspaper. And the woman was writing about a poem about her children being dead. So Christmas time is sort of a difficult time for her because she's thinking about them being in their graves. And it's not a ghost story or ghost poem precisely. It's just sort of a dark mood for a Christmas poem to have. And what I had found about the author, she actually did have three children who had died. So it was kind of semi-autobiographical poem, and that may be why she didn't care to add a supernatural element to it, because it was just too close and too real for her. And then another is a poem by Paul Laurence Dunbar, a very prominent African-American author, and it was published in a Christmas issue of a magazine. Doesn't specifically reference Christmas in its content. It's called The Haunted Oak, and it's a very dark poem, kind of the voice of the tree talking about the lynchings that it's witnessed. So with kind of that poem sort of bringing up kind of the really some of the horrible parts of African American history, I was thinking, okay, this is maybe has something to do with why there aren't more stories. You think about, for example, the Ku Klux Klan and the robes that they wear, the white robes, kind of trying to emulate ghosts. Mm-hmm. And they would claim to people that they were the ghosts of Confederate soldiers. So that may be one reason why the topic was being ignored. There's also the stereotype that was very popular in minstrel shows and later on in early films and even later films, where African Americans are depicted as being especially afraid of ghosts. So, you know, if you're a black person, you might just want to avoid that subject. Mm-hmm. You don't want to play into the stereotype. You want to, if you're going to write a Christmas ghost story, you're going to want to find your own way to do it on your own terms.
Did want to mention that soon on the Historian Podcast, maybe even our, well, anyway, we're going to do an interview, or I'm going to do an interview with one of your sources about African Americans and Christmas. It's a historian named Robert May, who I found out did his undergraduate work at Union College in Schenectady. He lives out in Washington. His book is called Yuletide in Dixie. According to May, and I believe other historians, there was this myth that developed after the Civil War. It's kind of part of the Lost Cause narrative that the South had been, that slavery had almost been noble, that slaves were treated well at Christmas. And I believe Robert May finds that was not the case.
Right. I'm glad he got in touch with you. I had discovered his book kind of relatively late in my own research. And, you know, I because I was doing a collection of stories, it's for general readers. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of scholarship that I need to bring to it per se. But there were topics that I did want to address in the introduction, kind of like the absence of more African-American stories, and trying to do research about why that was the case. I did learn of his book and then had gotten in touch with him. I had found a number of poems and stories that were written by white authors about African-American Christmases in the South, you know, plantation Christmases, and kind of very stereotypical depictions. And yeah, often that fiction and also nonfiction about how Christmas was celebrated in the South, they were depicting it as something that might go on for, you know, a week or more, and that it was a really happy time. And kind of that, just, you can see how it might be happier than the rest of the year, but, you know, if you're a slave, you're a slave, and that's not going to be a very, you know, an entirely happy time for sure.
Right. Chris Filippo is editor of the Valancourt Book of Victorian Christmas Ghost Stories, Volume 4. We do have about 5 minutes left. I just wanted to talk with you about you for a little bit. I've known you for a long time. Do you remember when we met on the train back from New York City? Must have been in the early 2000s.
Yeah, well, I had to check. I think it was 2012.
Wasn't that early?
Yeah, I mean, I lose track of time myself as to how long, but I think that's when it was. Yeah, I was returning kind of with my mother from a visit to my brother and sister-in-law in New York City, and she and I ended up being separated on the train. It was pretty crowded, and I was seated next to you, and I don't remember exactly, but either something you were reading caught my attention or something I was reading caught your attention, and we found that we had some people in common that we knew and some common interests. So we did kind of a little more talking than reading on the train than I think we planned on.
We did. And on and off, we've been in touch over the years. In fact, I looked at my database of stories. I found your name in like 10 or 12 of them where you've done research for some of my stories about Fulton and Montgomery County history. And you're really a diligent. You mentioned how hard it is to do, research now, but you're still doing it, and you're very good at it, especially, I would say, some of the online stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge doing research in the time of COVID. You can't just walk into the state library or university libraries. There are just a lot of them these days. I had originally hoped to look at some of the publications and flip through, because there's so many things that haven't been scanned. I found a lot of younger classmates when I was at the university who thought, oh, well, you can just get rid of libraries, can't you? Everything's online. Well, no, there's a lot of stuff that's not. Yeah. But like the Fulton History website, I'm sure you've talked about a number of times on the website or found occasion to mention it.
Yes.
It is a challenge to learn how to use a search engine. It is very versatile in what it can do. It gives you far more options than most newspaper databases have, or even the Google search engine has. But you really have to learn all the tricks of it, and that does take some time.
And, of course, that's being done by a man, right? Tom Trunisky. And it's not like the Library of Congress or somebody... Right. With a lot of money doing this, he's just doing it.
Yeah, and because of that fact, it is quirky. I mean, it's an odd interface that it has, and periodically it goes down because he's having to run his own servers and make sure he has backups and all that, and fend off hackers and all those kind of things. And that's a lot for just one guy to be trying to do. But it's admirable that he does it, and his site has helped me in any number of research projects.
Well, best of luck with the new book, Chris. And we mentioned how you, ironically, live in Bethlehem, so maybe that'll help sales. I'm not sure.
Maybe
so. The book is called The Valancourt Book of Victorian Christmas Ghost Stories, Volume 4. It should be available this Christmas season, I would think.
Yeah, it'll be available well before then. We're conscious of the fact that mail is slowed, so we want to have ample time for people. In fact, it is available for pre-order right now. Just all the details are not up on the site yet about the content, but that'll be posted soon.
You've been listening to the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore.